Thanks, Lars. This is an intimidating talk to give in front of experts from your own program and those from the other program or programs that don't have any background in what I'm presenting. So I'll try to do the best I can with apologies to both groups at the outset. I'm going to take about 3 or 4 minutes to provide an overview of what this activity associated with fluid-mediated particle transport in geophysical flows is all about. Then I'll show you a brief video that is meant to motivate the kinds of activity in the context of a simple example of a fluid particle flow. And then I'll go to the blackboard and I'll try to present efforts to model what we see in the video for this flow. So the first question is, what are the individuals in the program doing? And the answer is that we're attempting to understand the physical processes that are involved in natural flows, not industrial flows, for example, that involve the interaction of fluids and particles. Why do we bother? Well, such flows are important in that they typically pose hazards to life and property. And they're also important if we're trying to understand the processes that led to the evidence that we see in the geologic record. So they've been studied by geologists. Certainly the geologic record has been studied by geologists for a long time. And physicists and engineers have taken a more recent interest in coming to grips with the fundamental mechanisms that determine their behavior.
Does this include mudslides?
Yes. Yeah.
Of local interest.
That's true. Other examples of the flows that we're interested in would be the transport of sand due to waves and currents at the beach, and the formation of ripples and sandbars that is associated with the movement of such material. Also, the movement of sand, again, in a different context, in a sandstorm over a desert topography, and the formation there of dunes and the motion of dunes that is associated with the transport of sand. Now, these are two examples of situations where the particles are driven by a turbulent shearing flow over beds that are roughly horizontal. Other important examples of particle fluid flows occur driven by gravity down inclines. And these include avalanches of snow down mountainsides and underwater transport of sediment down continental shelves. The common features of these flows, in that they involve fluids and particles, and the fluids, at least on Earth, are water and our atmospheric air. We're also interested in flows that occur, for example, on Mars. The evidence that is provided by the topography of Mars in the form of dune formation and structures of dune fields give us indirect evidence of what the atmosphere is on Mars. So that Earth is not the only planet that we're interested in these flows. Also, the example flows that I gave you involve particles of different materials and particles of different sizes. The particles in a mud flow are on the order of tens of microns. The particles in a underwater avalanche could be on the order of many, or at least several meters. So we're dealing with flows that occur both in fluids with extremely different properties and involve particles with extremely different particles. All of these flows involve the flow of a turbulent fluid or turbulent flows of a fluid-particle mixture. Turbulence, as you probably know, is an extremely difficult problem that can't be really regarded as solved. So we're attempting to understand these processes against the background of a turbulent fluid or fluid particle mixture whose behavior is not completely described. The interactions, the issues that drive us, are understanding the interaction between particles and a turbulent fluid, and understanding the influence of particles upon the turbulence of a fluid. We also have to confront the direct interaction between particles. In some flows, particles will be driven into direct collisions with one another. In other flows, the particles are close enough so that they interact in pairs through a viscous liquid. We have to deal with the interaction of the fluid and the particles with a static bed of particles, and that involves both particle-particle interactions, fluid-particle interactions, and the modification of the fluid due to the presence of the bed. And finally, we're interested in the mechanisms by which deformations of the bed take place. Now, the last title that you were provided with had to do exclusively with the physics of desert dunes. And I promise you I'm not going to talk at all about that. Instead, I'm going to focus on what I think may be the simplest problem of fluid particle interaction, and that has to do with steady, uniform flow of wind-blown sand. Okay? And I have a video here that will illustrate the kind of flow that I'd like to attempt to provide a model for. I'll let it run long enough for you to gain an impression of the particle interactions with themselves and with the bed and with the wind, and then I'll tell you what I'd like to do. So this is a flow of sand grains in a wind tunnel. The film is due to Alexandre Valence and his co-workers at Rennes and Nantes. The film was produced by a BBC television team who was interested in doing a program on windblown sand and desert dunes. And there are a number of phenomena that are present in this extremely simple flow that are more or less generic to the issues that we have to deal with in the program. And I'll try to illuminate them for you. So look at the interaction of the particles in the bed with those that are colliding with the bed. That's an important component of the physics of this flow. Look at the interaction between particles above the bed. There's certainly at least some collisional interaction. I'm going to be talking first about the process by which particles are collisionally ejected from the bed and accelerated by the turbulent wind, only to come back to the bed and collide with it, rebounding and ejecting other particles. And the idea is that I'm going to attempt to provide an analysis of on average, steady and uniform flow that will provide us with the possibility of describing, for example, all the strength of the distant wind, that is the shearing flow that is not the shear stress and the turbulent shearing flow that is not directly influenced by the particles, drives a integrated volume flow rate of particles.
What's the typical particle size there in the distribution?
So typical particle size is about 250 microns. That is, that's a typical particle size for a what's called an erosion desert, someplace like the Sahara, where particles have been transported for a sufficiently long time that all the fines have been blown away and all of the coarse particles have been left behind. And in the middle of such an erosion desert, the particles are relatively rounded and they're relatively uniform in their diameter. And that's about 250 microns. This sand is somewhat more angular sand. And what is the diameter, Alexander? 0.5. So this is rather coarse sand. Okay, so somewhat more angular and coarser than a typical desert sand. And of course, if we're talking, I mean, it's not only deserts we're interested in. If we're interested in dune formation, it's there are interesting dunes at seasides. So in Namibia, there are dune fields that are at the side of the ocean.
Is there a wind profile or is it?
Yes, there is a. This is so the turbulent wind. I'll sketch a wind profile in just a moment. Yes, but the wind, there's a turbulent shearing flow. The wind velocity is greatest at the top. It's brought to rest at the particle bed. And it's the drag of that shearing flow that is accelerating particles that have been scattered from the bed. And then I should say the interaction of those particles, the drag of those particles upon the wind, then diminishes the wind until there's an equilibration between the strength of the wind and the number of particles that are in motion above the bed. And that's the steady state that I'd like to provide you with a description of. Okay, so let me stop this. This may be the most interesting part of the talk. You have some pretty short chalk around here. Okay. So I want to attempt to derive a continuum description of the flow that you just saw, that describes the exchange of momentum between the particles and the turbulence, and any exchanges of momentum that occur in particle interactions, direct or particles interactions with the turbulence. And first I'm going to focus on a mechanism that is called saltation, maybe somewhat confusingly. It's called saltation because it's derived from the Latin word for jump. And it describes the typical motion of a grain that has been ejected by, let's say, an extreme or a relatively strong turbulent velocity fluctuation from a particle bed. So this is what I'm indicating that with the wavy line, a bed of particles. And a particularly strong turbulent eddy may eject a grain from the bed. And that grain, once it gets above the bed, is accelerated. There's gravity in the picture too, so I can't forget that. Is accelerated by the by the turbulent shearing flow until it finally comes back to the bed with a far greater horizontal velocity than it left the bed with. And at the bed, it rebounds, typically. And in addition to rebounding, it ejects other particles. And these ejected particles are themselves accelerated by the wind. They undergo their trajectory with their increase in horizontal velocity. They collide with the bed, rebound, eject other particles, etc. And eventually, this sets up a mean flow of particles above the bed. And at every point in the mean flow of particles, the flow mean velocity of the particles is somewhat less than the mean velocity of the fluid. Also, then there's eventually set up a concentration profile of particle above the bed. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to model this process and try to take into account the exchanges of momentum in the particle phase and the drag of the particles upon the fluid and vice versa in order to solve a set of differential equations that will determine for me profiles. Of a velocity, so let me set up a coordinate axis here. Mean particle velocity as a function of position, fluid velocity as a function of position, and concentration as a function of position. Why would I bother to do that? Because as I said, we're interested in the relationship between the total flux of particles, which would be the integration from zero to the depth of the height of the flow. And we're interested in the way that this quantity depends upon the strength of the turbulent shearing flow. So this is the shear stress. Let's say far from the bed, so I'll give that a subscript in infinity, because when particles are present, this shear stress will be no longer constant through the profile of the fluid. The shear stress is going to reflect the fact that there's a concentration of particles at every stage. Okay, so we'd like to have an expression for this particle flux as a function of the shear stress. And that's it. So that lets us know what the relationship is between the total flow of particles over the bed and the strength of the distant particle-free wind. Okay. So, what ingredients would have to go into such a description? Well, I'm going to need to know something about the transfer of momentum in the particle phase over a particular level of the flow. So I'm going to be attempting to determine expressions for a particle pressure and a particle shear stress as a function of other parameters in the flow. And I'm certainly going, in order to close the problem, I'm going to have to say something about the transfer of mass and momentum in collisions at the bed. Okay, so those are two important ingredients that I'm going to have to introduce. And it may be that focusing attention purely on this ballistic trajectory of a saltating grain is not going to capture all of the physics. There's additional physics that may have to be taken into account. And the additional physics could be the possibility of the concentrations becoming large enough above the bed that I must take into account momentum transfer in interparticle collisions above the bed. Okay, so there's another mechanism that I'm not talking about to begin with, but maybe I'm going to have to talk about to end with. And also, far enough from the bed, the strengths of the turbulent velocity fluctuations, which increase with distance from the bed, may have a direct role in levitating particles in addition to collisions and saltations. Okay, so maybe I should remind myself that I'm not dealing with collisions, and I'm not dealing with direct suspension. For the moment, I'm only looking at this process of jumping grains. Okay, and the grains then don't interact with each other. They don't interact with each other while they're flying. They only interact with one another when they hit the bed. Okay, so let's see. Oh, so I'd like to phrase the problem, or maybe I can. I'll give you some idea of what's happening here. So the wind profile, absent grains. The wind profile and the absence of grains is given in terms of something called U star and a constant kappa. This is all kind of traditional. All right, so this absent grains, this constant kappa, which you'll see again and again, is a constant 0.41 that bears the name of Theodor Karman. This quantity called the friction velocity. Is related to the distant shear stress if we don't have any grains. Through the density of the fluid. Okay, and what else? And this quantity, which is a bed roughness, that is the point at which the velocity vanishes, is typically taken. Maybe I should say roughness is taken to be a particle diameter divided by 30. Okay, so this is crude modeling of turbulence. So in order to introduce a model for turbulence like this, I have to offer apologies to half of the participants in the program, because they're experts at computing and modeling pure turbulence and the interaction of particles with turbulence. Okay, so this is comically crude in some respects, but I say I'm going to deal with the simplest model that I think is applicable to this flow. And let's see, and when there are particles present, then this fluid shear stress is going to be modified locally. That is, that the fact that that there are particles in the flow, and if we can calculate a shear stress associated with the particle phase, then the total shear stress through the flow is going to have components contributed by the fluid shear stress and the particle shear stress, and they will sum to this distant shear stress S infinity.
Jim, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is this logarithmic profile what's also called the law of the wall?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Now, so that's fine. That's the wind profile absent particles. And let's see. So then, and then there's a drag on the particles. So let me give you that. And of course, I'm going to idealize my particles as being spheres. I'm going to take the simplest possible drag law, that is, drag that's due strictly to viscous forces. And in fact, this is not strictly true. That is, in the flow that we're looking at and for the particles that are involved in the flow, there's another component of the drag called form drag that is just as important, but I'm going to ignore it because that depends upon the relative velocities and complicates the problems, but it can be included. Okay, let's see. So what do we have? That's fine. And now,
the question I had, so when you use the law of the wall, that's to map back to the shear stress, so you get the right planar drag for going over a surface.
Well, you get the drag that the fluid is exerting upon itself, yes.
And on the surface.
And on the surface, eventually, right. Yeah.
This is the unmodified case. So
unmodified case, yeah. So I'm going to modify it.
But on the same wind over a bed, I get a different drag.
Yes.
If I have a wing made of a bed.
Well, it depends on what you mean by drag. That is the total shear stress. The total shear stress stays the same, but it's now divided into contributions associated with the fluid and contributions associated with the particles. That is, the collisional transfer momentum of the particles on the bed. So that there's a trade-off between the fluid drag on the bed and the particle drag on the bed. Okay? Anything else? And let's see, so now having given you the more or less these physical quantities or in terms of physical units, I'd like to do the rest of the problem in terms of dimensionless quantities. That I want to introduce characteristic lengths, characteristic velocities, and a characteristic ratio of the density of the material of the particles to the density of the gas. Okay, so now I want to talk about making things dimensionless. So we'll make lengths dimensionless by the particle diameter. I didn't identify this, but that's what it is. Particle diameter. Lengths by d. Velocity. The gravitational acceleration times d, let's say stresses by the density of the material of the particles, velocity square root of gd, that has dimensions of velocity, and stresses by the density of the material of the particles times gd. And I should say then that in this system, the ratio of the velocity of the material of the grains, which are typically quartz, the density of the material of the grains to the density of the fluid is about 2,200. Yes.
About the drag on particles. I would have expected there to be a velocity difference in there between the fluid and particles.
Well, that's the drag coefficient.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and in applications to the continuum, it gets multiplied by the concentration and the velocity difference. Yeah, you're exactly right. So I talked about two in my preamble. I talked about particle water systems, particle air systems, okay? And the way that they differ. So this is true, this is air. For water, sand in water, that's what I'm talking about. So that there are similarities but important differences between particles in air and particles in water. Okay, so that's one element that we have to keep in mind, and that certainly is an element that continues to reappear in the program, because some of the participants are interested in particle air system, others are interested in particle water systems. Okay, what else? So I said that. Okay, one more thing is I'm going to make this distant. I'm going to make this distant shear stress in the fluid, in the particle-free fluid, dimensionless, and this defines a parameter that appear again and again that's identified with the name of a guy by the name of Shields. Who did very early and important research on the initiation of particle motion above a bed of particles in a fluid shearing flow. Okay, so this is the Shields parameter, and that'll appear. That in fact, if we're in dimensionless terms, then I'm going to be interested in the dimensionless flux given as a function of the Shields parameter. Okay, so that's all kind of by way of introduction. And now let's talk about, we're going to talk first about modeling the splash. Okay, so splash. And now I'm going to talk about experiments that have been done by Alexandre Valence, one of the participants in the program, and numerical simulations that accompany them done by Luc Auger. And these involve a bed of particles and shooting a particle at a definite angle with respect to the bed, into the bed, and measuring the average rebounding particle and the properties of the additional particles that were ejected. Okay, so the idea is that that there is an average rebounding particle, and of course there's some scatter about this averaging rebounding particle because at the same angle of inclination you hit various particles on the surface of the bed, so the bed is presenting a random profile to the incoming particles, and I'll call the incoming velocity c, and I'll call the average of the outgoing velocity c prime bar. And in the experiments, measure the properties of the rebounding particles, and the rebounding particles, let's say the average of their ejection speed, so this is meant to be the speed, is a coefficient of restitution that depends upon angle. And also, there's a corresponding coefficient for the y component, for the vertical component of this. Okay, so this quantity is well known. I mean, that's the speed at which you're shooting into the bed. This is the y component of that velocity vector, and then the averages of the rebound are characterized by two geometry dependent coefficients of restitution. Okay, and these have explicit form, so I'll give you the numerical values that they had in the experiments. So here, 0.87 minus, and okay.
Is y normal to the bed? Carol?
Yeah.
These averages are in all of the rebounding particles, or just the most energetic ones?
The most energetic ones. So the rebounding particle identity is tracked, and then the next part of the story is the ejecta. Okay, so in addition to the rebounding particles are other particles that are scattered out of the bed. And the important quantity is the number of ejecta, and the number of ejecta is independent of the angle of incidence of the incoming bead, but depends upon its speed. And, well, I'm sorry, the only angular dependence that it has is inherited from that of the coefficients of restitution, and this relationship looks something like this. And this is true, that is, there are ejecta only if the incoming speed exceeds a definite value, which in the experiments was found to be dimensionless 40, and in the experiments this quantity was measured to be 13. Okay? I mean, the numerical values aren't so crucial, but what is important now is that there is a characterization of what happens, the response of the bed on average to shooting a particle in at a given angle. Yes?
These experiments were done without any flow.
Without any flow.
I mean, this is complicated in itself, but if there was a turbulent flow, would these values change?
I don't think that the turbulent flow near the bed is going to have much of an influence on these kinds of exchanges of momentum between particles. It's going to influence perhaps the slowest particles, and I should say that the experiments only could resolve values of the values of the ejecta that whose velocities were less than one. So these guys are ignored. Let me ask Alexander what his opinion is. What do you think about the?
I don't think. Yeah, the time scale of the mechanical collision is very small in comparison. I guess with the scale of the three.
Yeah, the reason I asked
was the time is 10⁻⁶.
The reason I asked this is there are cases where if you dial down the particle size, just the lift forces and other things themselves are able to pick up the particles. So obviously, when they get bigger, then those pre-sensing mechanisms may be less important, and collisional mechanisms will dominate. So there could be some overlap regime where both mechanisms could coexist and influence each other.
Yes, but I think, let's say for the people who aren't participants of the program, this is really an issue between liquid particle systems and air particle systems. That is, in liquid particle systems, the fluid forces may provide a dominant effect in initiating motion in the bed, and collisions may be negligible because of the strong fluid forces in the bed. So, yes, you're absolutely right. I think the peculiarity of the particle-air system is that the inertial effects are dominating in all the viscous effects, or turbulent effects. Yes?
Over what range is the perpendicular component valid in theta, and does it depend on the structure of the bed itself? It clearly diverges at
the lowest value of impact you use? Yeah, I mean, so you don't take it to zero, and you notice that both expressions agree at theta equal pi over 2, as you'd expect. Okay, so you don't, the singularity doesn't get in the way. Was there a second part? There was a second part of your question.
To what extent the structure of the bed itself, the roughness of the bed, affects the...
Yeah, but that's what you were seeing here with the angular dependence. So it's being taken into account in a crude way, but the structure of the bed, meaning the roughness of the top surface due to the dense packing of particles that comprise the bed. Yeah, So, well, the diameter of the particles shot into the bed was the same as the diameter of particles of the bed. So that could influence the scattering. So this is the let's say, the best that we're doing at the moment for the characterization. That is, these coefficients to these terms is the best that we're doing at the moment for characterizing how the roughness of the bed influences the rebound of the particles. Okay, so we're capturing something, but we're not doing it in much detail. Okay, so that's so just keep these in mind now. So we've got some information about what's happening at the bed, that is how the velocities of incoming and outgoing particles are related to the bed, and we'll use that later to determine boundary conditions at the bed for a set of equations that we're deriving to describe what happens above the bed. Okay, so now let's talk about what's happening above the bed. Let's talk about trajectories. And so here is the typical trajectory that I'd like you to focus your attention on. And of course, above the bed, we have a number of these trajectories. So the idea is that at each value of y, we've got many trajectories that are carrying momentum through this. But I'm going to focus on one, and I'm going to take a look at the x and y components of the velocity of an upward trajectory, and I'm also going to look at the x and y components of the downward trajectory, and I'm going to try to characterize the transfer of momentum through any y level in this planar situation. And I'm going to make the assumption, so I've got gravity in the problem too, I don't want to forget about that. I'm going to make the assumption that the negative y component, that is the downward y component, is equal and opposite to the upward y component. That's neglecting drag. On the vertical velocity. That'll make my arguments a little easier. Let's say, so we have equations of motion for the upward it's change of momentum. So now, well, I'm writing now the equation of motion for the x upward velocity. And what I've done, so this is really, this is dy plus dt. So the equation of, and I guess I need a, so the equation of motion for the rate of change of the x velocity, dx dt, is equal to the drag force on the particle, has been replaced by parameterizing the upward trajectory in terms of the y component, and that brings in the upward y velocity. So that's simply the equation of motion for the x velocity, the x plus velocity. And I'll do the same for the negative x velocity. But I'm going to use the fact that sigma y plus is minus sigma y minus to give me a minus here. Okay, so these are just the equations of motion for the upward and downward trajectories, making use of this assumption. And maybe something I should have pointed out, let's see, is that we, is that the x component of the velocity on the downward trajectory is going to exceed and perhaps far exceed the x component of the velocity on the upward trajectory because of the drag of the fluid exerted on the particle during that part of the trajectory above the level of y that we're interested in. Okay, so what I want to do now is I'd like to get a continuum description and the continuum description is going to complete a balance of forces for the x and y components of momentum of the particle phase. I'm going to make reference to these ejecta and rebound laws soon. Okay. So the kinds of continuum formulation I'm going to use is going to be to equate the derivative of the particle pressure to the influence of gravity and to equate the change in the shear force, this is the particle shear stress. So pressure and particle pressure and particle shear stress. So those are the two balance of forces that I have in the problem, and also I have an expression now for the particle flow velocity. If I'm able to determine what the particle shear stress is, the particle flow velocity then solves an equation where I take the fluid shear stress to be the distant dimensionless shear stress in the particle-free fluid minus the particle shear stress. Okay, and when the particle shear stress, one half.
D is the fluid shear stress. Fluid shear velocity.
Pardon me?
D is now the wind velocity.
I mean this to be a U, a capital U.
Okay.
Okay, so I think I mean it to be this guy.
Okay.
Okay? So these are reasonable. The issue is what's the expression for the particle pressure and what's the expression for the particle shear? How do I close these equations? Okay? And I'm going to use these trajectory equations in order to get some information. Well, for one thing, the pressure by definition has to do with the upward flux of momentum. Of particles going up and particles coming down. Okay, or let's say it has to do with the average of that, whatever average I might be using. So that if I'm focusing my attention on a level of the flow and I'm asking myself what's the value of the particle pressure at this level of the flow, it has to do with the rate at which momentum is being transferred across this level in the flow. And if I use this quantity, I can say that this is just equal to I identify this quantity with the analog of a temperature. Okay, typically the definition of the temperature is not only going to involve a y fluctuation, it's going to involve an x fluctuation and a z fluctuation. But in the context of this problem, I'll roughly assume that the x fluctuation is the same as the y fluctuation. Regard the problem as two-dimensional. So this is a model of the pressure in terms of two continuous variables, the concentration and T, which I'll call the temperature. Or it's really the square of the strength of the vertical velocity fluctuations. Okay? So if you like, I have a relation for this, but I don't know what the temperature is. And let's see. And now I need to say something about this. And I'll do it. So let's multiply these equations by Cy plus and add. And if I do that, I get something that looks like this. Let's see, do I use cancel? Okay, and I think that comes just from multiplying these guys by sigma x. So I get that squared there. These guys cancel. And now if I imagine averaging this and averaging this, these guys escape the averaging, and assume that the average of the product is equal to the product of the average, I can write this as okay, and this is the relation that I'm interested in. Let's see, I don't think I have a C here. Or maybe I do. Oh, that's the C is involved in the definition of the shear strength. Okay, and so this equation I can use to close these equations. And I'll put in a coefficient here. In order to compensate in a crude sense for the for this statistical assumption. Okay, so ds over p. So I've achieved my goal of obtaining a continuum formulation for the fields in question, that is in a saltation regime. I've got four ordinary differential equations that I can, in principle, solve, but I need boundary conditions, and I need to say something about the temperature. So let's give me 5 more minutes and I should be able to. Okay, so what about boundary conditions? Well, I've got these expressions for the change in velocity and collisions at the boundary. So the mass flux I can get by taking the average of that quantity. The x momentum flux I can get by taking the average let's see, I want incoming minus outgoing, I guess. Okay, and here the average that I use is a simple Gaussian. And if you use this simple, well, where n0 is related to the, where c0 is n0 times pi over 6 in dimensionless terms. This is the number density. This is the concentration. This is the mean slip velocity at the surface of the bed. This is the temperature of the surface of the bed. And when you carry out the averages, And now what I mean by bar are averages based upon this distribution function at the bed. And when you carry out the averages, let's see, in a steady situation, this is zero. And this gives you a relationship between u0 and t0 for those numerical coefficients that I gave you. It's a definite number. If we equate this to be equal to the value of the pressure at the bed, this provides a further determination of the coefficients to give definite numbers for these guys at the bed. And finally, then this, when identified with the shear stress at the bed, gives a relationship between the shear stress, the concentration, and the temperature. Okay, so what we do with the temperature is we take it to be constant through the entire flow. There's no reason to assume otherwise. There seems to be no mechanism which directly is influencing the temperature. Here we have boundary conditions for the slip velocity at the base of the flow and a condition on the relating the shear stress to the temperature. The concentration is a parameter to be determined. And there's an additional boundary condition at the bed on the fluid velocity. That is, we take the no slip velocity at the bed. And finally, we close the problem by specifying a boundary condition far from the bed. And we typically will take that to be where the local value of the flux, which is C times U, is some very small value. Okay? And this closes the problem, allows you to integrate this system of differential equations with boundary conditions, and provides a determination of Q, dimensionless Q, that is Shields parameter minus a constant value below which solutions don't exist. Okay, so that's the story of modeling this simplest of all particle properties. Let me just say a few words about what's been neglected. So we haven't said anything about suspensions. There's an indication that suspensions do play a role far from the bed. That is, the predicted velocity profiles and concentration profiles based upon this theory depart from those measured in the wind tunnel experiments. And we can bring them into closer correspondence by incorporating suspension in a vertical momentum balance. And also there's an indication in the wind tunnel data that collisions are playing an increasingly important role very near the bed as the Shields parameter increases. And those collisions near the bed can be taken into account in both the vertical momentum balance and the tangential momentum balance using crude arguments for kinetic theory. I'll stop there. Thank you for your patience.
In the movie, I saw that some of your brains were vigorously rotating. Does angular momentum play any role in this?
No. I mean, you certainly expect that rotation would influence the collisions with the bed. And in the sense that...
They take up a lot of energy, right?
No.
Yes, they may. I mean, I really haven't characterized, I haven't said anything about the energetics of the flow. I've just been focused on the momentum balances. So I would say those rotations could be important in the collision process at the bed. They are, to the extent that the particles in the experiment, the experimental determination of the coefficients of restitution were rotating or not rotating, they may be considered to be in the coefficients of restitution. Were your particles rotating?
In the splash experiment?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. So no, we don't have a means of incorporating rotations into the scheme.
So generally asked what, so you know, the normal physicist question next is, imagine I apply a perturbation to the bed with some wave number.
But now you're getting into the problem that you wanted me to talk about right from the beginning.
Well, that's my question.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the, so deformations of the bed.
Is this a stable problem? Are the perturbation in, does it grow or damp in the bed?
It'll grow. Yeah. I mean, that's why you'll see ripples.
Right.
And maybe larger perturbations or wavelength perturbations will grow into things that are larger than ripples. Yes?
It was very obvious from the movie that the distribution of particle energies is strongly bimodal. There are some particles that are jumping up with a very large energy, others are barely moving. And is that effect incorporated in your calculation anywhere?
Well, so the, when you talk about particles barely moving, do you mean those close to the bed?
Yes, there are some close to the bed that move very little. There are others that are bouncing very high.
Yes, but remember, in the particle, in the characterization of the ejecta and the rebound, particles that weren't able to get a greater than a particle diameter from the bed were ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we may be ignoring some of those particles that you're following as you look at the picture. There is definitely a flux of mass associated with particles that do not leave a significant distance from the bed.
That's why you have a sleeve wall also as a boundary condition, I think.
Well, that's kinematically, that's why there's a slip at the bed, but dynamically, we're not taking into account those particles that are moving along the bed.
Yeah, when you have multiple collision processes, you expect to see something like equipartition. You expect that distributions of energy become smooth. And there seems to be the opposite effect happening here. Is that a fair comment?
You're talking once again about the slow particles moving near their bed?
Or? No, I'm just thinking that you have a particle striking the surface
yes.
with a well-defined momentum, and it produces scattered particles with a distribution of energies all somewhat relevant. And you'd expect that by propagating this process, multiple convolutions would give you an increasingly smooth distribution of momenta. And it seems that there's something present that's counteracting that.
Well, let me ask you that. What about it? What would you say based upon your measurements of the fluctuations? Is it a bimodal distribution?
I mean, roughly, we can say that there is two kind of population, the rebound particle and the ejected particle.
At some point, any particle will hit the ground at the same velocity, whatever height it got ejected to, whatever height it was dropped from. So they'll reach a terminal velocity and then they'll hit with a fixed velocity by the wind, so there's an attractor.
Another question. What fraction of the incoming kinetic energy is absorbed by the bed on average?
The bed is a good absorber. You'll get an idea. And so, I would say for collisions that are vertical, the coefficient of restitution for those collisions is 0.15. So that is one measure then of the dissipative properties of the bed for a particular kind of collision.
Yes, what is the scale? Sorry, Jim. What is the scale of the ejection velocity of the particles? Is it some velocity of the fluid, like the shear velocity, or? When they are ejected, they have a velocity, like the initial velocity with which they meet the bed. Does it scale with something of the fluid?
No, it hasn't been scaled with anything in the fluid, no.
No, I wonder, physically, there's some scale of the fluid, like the shear velocity or something, which could...
No, but I think that comes back to Bala's question, is what role does the turbulent shear play in the collision process? And we're saying that it's purely the inertial properties of the particles and their restitution and friction that determine the rebound, not anything to do with the turbulent shear. Four particles in air.
Great. Thanks, Jim.